Good morning, brothers and sisters. We are happy to gather together in a new year and continue to seek the face of the Lord. Hebrews chapter 12, I invite you there. I plan to try to finish the message I started 2 months ago, and I realize that some who were there then, here then, are not here today, and some who were here today, we're not here then, so that makes things a little complicated. But the good thing is we studied that whole passage in our Sunday school lesson today. Bless me, O my Father, story of Esau and how he missed the blessing. And this morning we would like to try to finish the points that we started and introduced back then. One little note on the me getting out of preaching, and some of you have been harassing me about that, the visiting speakers that we had. Well, the Christmas sermon that I had intended ended up making the ordination sermon on Friday night, so I enjoyed having that one ready and not having preached it here. It was going to be on the surprise ending of Mary's life, or Mary and her character, and ended up being a deacon ordination message, so I thought that was interesting to get it ready for one place and have it preached somewhere else. Hebrews chapter 12 is the story of Esau is planted in the middle of admonition to saints, and I'd like to just break in at verse 11 and just maybe jump over to read some of this passage and get some of the context. Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Wherefore, lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed. Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled, lest there be any fornicator or profane person, as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. For you know how that afterward, when he would have inherited the blessing, he was rejected. In other words, when he wanted to receive it, he was not able, for he found no place, no way to change the facts, though he sought it carefully with tears. For ye are not come unto the mount that might be touched, and that burned with fire, and unto blackness and darkness and tempest, and the sound of a trumpet, and the voice of words, which voice they that heard entreated, that the word should not be spoken to them any more. And so forth and so on. He goes on to say, verse 22, but ye are come unto Mount Zion and unto the city of a living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn, which are written in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of just men made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant. And to the blood of sprinkling that speaketh better things than that of Abel. I'm sure I do not understand why God worked out the story of Jacob and Esau the way he did and determined that the younger would receive the blessing. But I am so grateful that in his mercy, it looked like the Jews were going to receive the blessing and be the greatest as they moved through the Old Testament. But in his mercy, God chose the secondborn, the Gentiles, and decided that they would be grafted in. And this morning we realize that we are the Jacob who didn't deserve God's blessing but have been richly blessed and are called to marry. And I think that might be married to Jesus. And I think that might be some of the reason why this whole story is given. Sinai happened first, and then Zion happened, the Old Testament law happened, and then the Christ came. Esau happened. He seems to be a type of the Old Testament, and then Jacob receives the unexpected blessing. But we'll let that go, and so our focus this morning is where we had it before. I'd like to continue with this thought of the question about godly or youth seeking the blessing for life. And I kept hearing the word this morning that I kept wondering if it was true or not. I kept hearing in our class, it's wonderful to sit and talk like this, but I kept hearing the word mistakes. Mistakes that Jacob made and the mistakes that Esau made and the mistakes and mistakes. And I'd like to just ask the question, were these just mistakes? So I decided this morning to do a little bit of review of where we were. And I don't know how this will work, and you know how it is, you think about how you should try to patch up what you started 2 months ago, and so I decided to write it up on the board, and I already did this early, and then my pen got weaker and weaker, so I quit partway through. And so I'd like to just talk about, bless me, O my Father, you seeking the blessing of godly forbears. That was our title. And where we were. But after I preached it here, I preached it, I don't know, a couple of three, four other places. And after a while, you can't remember what you did preach. And so when I wrote up the outline that I used that morning, and I had written this up, seek the blessing of the blessed, I do have two of them turned around. If any of you find your old notes, you'll find that I don't quite have the same arrangement that I had before. Say no to impulse decisions, embrace our heritage, forgive the injustices of your family. Flee fornication. Beware the unequal yoke and accept your lot, calling in life. And I'm just going to touch on this by way of review. I don't think these are just mistakes. I think some of these things are border on sins. They're moral choices. And I think mistakes is something that you think is right in the first place. You misspell a word or you work at something and you get it wrong because you didn't know any better. But there are things that we actually know better and do it anyway because we want the different outcome, and that's what's in focus in this. And as we went into, we first talked about seek the blessing of the blessed. And I went ahead and put this in just this little bit of an outline. All of us face a choice in life. And here we are. We can either seek the approval of the godly and receive God's blessing. Or we can seek the approval of the in group. There's a group, there's a cool group, there's a group that if you chase after them and you seek their approval, you're going to end up doing very foolish things and eventually take the path to destruction. We all want to be accepted. That's written in our genes. And I remember one night egging the boys on, I sat in the back of the car, and we did some things in our youth that was very, very wrong. We were harassing some girls. They didn't know who we were, but through that pressure, and I've heard of different things. I didn't grow up at Shirksville, but I heard of things of people my age talk about that they remember, that they did under the pressure of wanting to be accepted by the in-group. And I would just like to say that Esau's desire to be blessed by his father, if that would have been the thing that drove him all the way, but he met the children of Heth, he met the people of the land, and there was a desire to be blessed by them, to fit in with them. But sometimes success is determined more by who we avoid and who we do not associate with or who we do associate with determines where we end up in life, who we choose to run with. I remember reading, I believe it was A.W. Tozer, and he said, a man is marked by his friends, but he's also marked by his enemies. And there are some people who should be your enemies. There are some people who you should just not fit in with. None of us likes the fact that there are cool groups and people who feel rejected by others who run and accept each other. But the fact of the matter is, sometimes it's good to be rejected by those. Number two, we talked about this a little in our Sunday school class. Esau was an impulse man. Be very, very careful about your impulse decisions. Decided to write it up this way. In the moment of choice, almost always there's two choices, and the one is to have immediate gratification. I put this at the bottom because it's the low road. To do what feels good now. Esau wanted to satisfy his hunger, and so he cheated on the long-term goal for his life. And he sold it right then, and he received frustration and bitter reaping, and this is so often the story. I look back and see mistakes, no, sins that I did. Did it make me lose everything? Well, you end up paying for those things. They come back and haunt you later in life because you wanted instant gratification and you reap frustration and bitterness in that. It's so much better to learn to say no. Keep that long-term goal in mind and say, no, I will not satisfy. Please myself now. And when you look back, there's so much more satisfaction in life. And this is a very basic fact of human experience that Esau illustrates. Number three, embrace your godly heritage, our godly heritage. And I just wanted to, again, I want to just kind of re-impress on our youth the fact that Shirksville is not perfect. The Pilgrim Conference is not perfect. Mennonites are not perfect. But there is a huge difference in the goals and values of different churches. We need to embrace a heritage that has the full gospel pie. You know what I'm saying? Where when you come to church, you relate to your friends, you relate to Bible school, you're going to find a balance of teaching. And I just divided it up with the doctrine of the future, doctrine of salvation, evangelism, Christian ordinances, non-resistance, and nonconformity and separation, because those are all taught in the New Testament. And I believe you're getting a balanced diet, at least as much, I hope, I hear that. I'm glad for that. But I think about some of the other churches that are open this morning, and there's a faith-only salvation and strong patriotism that's being taught, and maybe it's just praise and worship. But there's an illiteracy of the Bible. If you attend those services, you would know what I'm talking about. And I just drew a line through that. But you can also go to a church where the gospel is loyalty to that church and empty traditions. I asked an acquaintance of mine the other day, what is Boxing Day? Well, he didn't know it was Boxing Day. But we have to keep this day. It has absolutely no value to him or nothing at all. It's just, well, you don't change anything. It's an empty tradition. And there, your whole spirituality is measured by how well you're loyal to that. And I believe there's a place for traditions, but we need the balance of all of this teaching. And so the godly heritage that Esau despised was only promised to the land, and it was not anything more than that. Now, we had touched that day on forgive the injustices of your family. And the fact of the matter is all of us bear some scars from home life that isn't quite what it ought to be. But the home life that Esau grew up in did hurt him. And it's inevitable that you will have some hurts in that. And we touched a little bit. And here's where you can really go on a rabbit trail, because you evaluate dysfunctional homes, and you think about the damage they do to youth, is something that I was just kind of starting to explore when I preached it at Shirksville. It's the value of preaching this again and again. And the fact is that they had an unresolved conflict in their home. Rebekah was told plainly the blessing would not be on Esau. She was told that plainly. But Isaac wanted it very firmly that the blessing would be on Esau. They had an unresolved conflict. They couldn't solve that problem, or they didn't solve that problem. And maybe it's something else. Maybe there is an unconfessed or unconfronted sin in the relationship. Maybe there is a sinful pattern in one of the partner's lives that is destroying and sapping the marriage. Whatever it is, if there is something that is a situation there that you can't talk about. A huge secret, a huge sin, an addiction, or whatever it might be. If there is a problem at the core, it produces a dysfunctional home. Because what is mom supposed to do if dad refuses to accept God's plan for the boys? Is she supposed to go around talking to the boys? Hey, dad doesn't see it right. She can't acknowledge it. What if mom always just lives by her feelings? She never gets out of bed in the morning. She's depressed. She sits in the closet. And dad's supposed to act like she's normal? Or is he supposed to act like she's got a real issue? Should he sit at the table and say, you know, mom, she's really got a problem. Don't grow up like her. You won't be normal. What's he going to do? So he acts like everything is normal and it's not normal. And the children don't know what to do with it. Well, they call this a dysfunctional home. But you can't talk about the problem that's going on. If there's anybody here like that this morning, I just beg you, if there's an unresolved conflict, I'm not saying that there won't be differences. In marriage, there has to be differences, or one's getting steamrollered. That's just the way it is. There will be differences, and if those things can be talked about, faced, and embraced, and built upon, it can make a very good home out of some very great differences. But if you can talk about it, in this situation, they couldn't talk, and then not being able to talk produced a tension. And that tension in the relationship went underground because dad was determined to work it out his way, mom is determined to work it out her way, so what are we going to do? And after the tension, of course, there's manipulations as you act out the feeling, or intimidations. I probably should have put those two together. Because some personalities go underground and try to pull strings behind the scenes and try to just work it out. And that's what Rebecca did. She didn't sit the boys down and say, I don't like it, and Pop doesn't like it, and we don't know what to do about it, but God said, this is the one who's going to get the blessing. And so the only thing I know what to do is dad is determined. How could she have talked about that with the boys? What could have she said? You know? But and on the other hand, if there's a woman who's growing up with raising a family and dad is not taking his place, she's supposed to be loyal to dad, and yet can she somehow say, well, boys, you know, things aren't what they ought to be, and I'm praying. It's not right for me to talk about it, but I want you to know I'm praying for this situation. What is it? What is the answer in that situation? I don't know of that, and I'm glad I don't, but it is a very difficult thing. When everything has to be acted out, where you either manipulate or intimidate and act out your feelings. Well, when that happens, when Isaac realized that Rebekah was pulling the wool and acting out things behind his back, the trust was gone, and it went out of the relationship. Talked about that a little bit, and whenever the trust is gone, and you can't act out, you can't show your feelings or weakness, you're living a mask all the time, then it's don't make a mistake, and you have a dysfunctional situation here. And this is what Esau and Jacob grew up with. And I don't know how much they saw it acted out every day, but it was there. It was a tension that was felt, and it affected them as they went through their lives. Now, what are you going to do about that? We kind of get sidetracked because when you look at this huge problem that they have, we're not talking about anybody who made the problem. Did Esau make the problem? All he could do is say, you know what? That problem existed. And I remember a man who struggled with a lot of depression because his home life was so sad and so difficult. And finally one day, he got the victory over that depression. And I asked him, what made the difference? He said, somebody asked me, confronted me, and said, so you think you know better than God what home you should grow up in? And he was like, well, no, I don't. Well, then why can't you accept that the problem your parents had was not your problem? The problem that your father had was not your problem. Why can't you accept that and choose to love him anyway? And choose to look at that as a stepping stone. And he said, I've decided to do that. And it made all the difference. I watched that young man, and it made all the difference in his life. because you have all kind of people who, like Hebrews 12 says, they look at the chastening that they've received, they make straight paths for their feet, they choose to follow peace with all men, and they receive the grace of God in their life. And that's what is talked about in this situation. So forgive the injustices in your home. I left a blank one there because I thought I might have to rewrite that when I decided to leave the smudge on there. All right, leave fornication. I don't think we covered this one the other day, and I would like to just talk about this problem of impurity and the fact that I believe Esau lost his way and he lost his birthright, he lost his blessing by hanging out with the daughters of Heth, by running with the Canaanites. We talked earlier about seek the blessing of the blessed. And the fact of the matter is there are a lot of ways to give up your purity in life as young people. And I would like to start with this problem. I don't know if you can see back there what I'm having or not, but I start with this issue of curiosity. And as a young person develops, they began to wonder about, you know, what's out there? What's it like? What's married life like? What are intimacies like? And as this desire, which is very normal and God-given and a blessing, it's a blessing for a young man to want a wife or for a young woman to want a husband. But as this grows into fantasies and evil imaginations, there are plenty of places to have that fed. There's a lot of things that are written, that are printed, that are talked about. There are a lot of people who will talk about it. There are many, many sources. And if you go and feed those fantasies, someday you will indulge in the forbidden. And indulging in the forbidden does bring pleasure for a moment. There is a thrill that accompanies it. There is a satisfaction, choosing the pleasures of Egypt for a moment. But this brings three things, the triplets of guilt and shame and fear. And those passions come so strong, what comes back. And so there is deception and hiding. And I don't know this, the Bible says our lesson picked up on Esau was a profane man. But in Hebrews here, he says that he was a fornicator or profane man. And I believe that because of the bad home situation that he was in, Esau felt all right to go run on Friday nights with the crowd, the ones that he found. And as he ran with those people, and he got acquainted with those daughters of Heth, as he got involved with them, then there was immorality. And they didn't feel good about that. But he couldn't get out of the immorality because it brought him the pleasure. It was a love-hate situation because he hated it the next day or the next week. At the same time, he found himself going back for it again. So the only answer was marriage. So he married these girls from the daughters of Heth. Now, who were they? Well, they were actually his cousins. Pretty far removed, but we studied about Sodom and Gomorrah and the Hittites. And I don't think I talked about that here except in class one day. But I really, really developed a little theory about why Noah cursed Canaan. You remember the story of Noah and him lying there under the influence of alcohol and his son Ham coming in and seeing him. Well, Ham didn't do what he should have done. He should have covered his father and he should have not said anything about it. He should have just taken the whole situation and handled it wisely. But he didn't. He did what we do as humans. We exploit it. We talk about bad things that we know. We like to talk about, tell other people. So why did Noah go and curse his grandson? And I have puzzled over that for a long time. And recently, I came to the conclusion, I might be wrong, but I think Ham went home and talked about it at the supper table. He went home and talked about that stupid answer that he heard in the Sunday school class, or some stupid thing that he saw the preacher do. No, he wasn't a Mennonite, and so he didn't sit in our churches, but He planted a seed in Canaan's mind, and Noah saw that Canaan did not respect him. His grandson did not respect him. He saw that he had a wayward look. And no wonder. How could you hear stuff like that about your grandpa and still respect him? How could you? And so he had this attitude. Well, Canaan moved to this area, and so it's called Canaan today. That's why it's called Canaan. And his children were the Amorites and the Hittites and the Hivites and the, go down the list, and Sodom and Gomorrah and Admah and Zeboam. If you go down the list, it's right there in that list. And he was the youngest son of Ham. Probably the other boys were gone and married already. I don't know that. I'm supposing that part. But the boy got the attitude. Now, these girls carried that in another generation or another one. It was like 350 years till Abraham's day. Shem was still alive, but you have the moving of time. And so they had this attitude that you don't have to worry about God. You don't have to worry. You can do whatever you want to. And that's who Esau married. That's who he married, the Hittites, daughters of Heth. After a while, you get tired of deception and hiding, and so it comes out. But in this, stuck in this bondage, while he's still trying to live a good life, and all the joy went out of his experience, and so he comes back into restlessness, and it's a pattern. So much a pattern that destroys young people. And I believe that there are a lot of young people raised in Christian homes who fall into this trap and lose the joy and say, you know what? I'm talking about this pattern here now. I'm not talking about a dad who's negative about the church. But as they look at, they're stuck in this and there's no joy in the Christian life, what's the use of just putting on a front and pretending when the joy is all out of it? Well, does it have to be that way? No. And so what I drew here is the way that just one pattern for victory and growth. Out of curiosity is openness with authority. You know, how is a young person going to go talk to mom or dad and say, you know what, I've got an issue, I've got a struggle, I've got questions about my own development, or about, you know, I'd like to have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, but somehow, or with that phone or with that device or with the books that I've discovered or whatever it is, if there's any way that this openness can be nourished, or with your wife or with your husband, you're struggling with something, this is where it all starts. Can there be sharing? And another thing that has to go with that is spiritual nourishment. If our spirits don't make contact with God's spirit, we become restless, and the restlessness cannot be fulfilled any other place. Another thing that has to go along, and I think these three things are all together, is a faith, a view of eternity. Where do I want to end up at the end of the road? Do I want to be another Esau? Do I want to be another tragedy, a moral failure? Is that what I want for my life? And so out of all of that, with the ability to talk and the ability to see the end and the spiritual nourishment that goes with that, comes a commitment to righteousness. So many times people say, well, just do what's right. Just do what's right. Just do what's right. But you know what? We don't always feel like doing what's right. And to just say, do what's right, and not say, how can you keep that strong desire, can be a very much of a frustration. But commitment to righteousness produces trust in relationships. And this is what Esau should have had. He should have been talking to Dad about the stuff. But Dad was getting blind. Dad was sitting in the tent. He couldn't even go hunting anymore. He wasn't just giving up wells, he was giving up everything. And Esau was out there by himself. But that's life, okay? You'll never find a perfect situation. Esau, go and talk. And then you'll have the trust. And trust brings security and fulfillment and a clear testimony. And this becomes a way of life. Now, the arrow goes back around to curiosity, because we always have our fallen human nature. But this is the pattern that we want to develop in our journey. I'd like to go now to the beware the snare of the unequal yoke. And I don't think I talked about that. In fact, maybe this is where my, yep, that's where my pen ran out of ink. So I stopped. I would like to just take this down now and use the whiteboard a little more and talk about this. Beware the snare of the unequal yoke. I'll just shorten it. And I've given some of this already as I talked about experimentation with fornication. But the fact of the matter is there is a strong attraction between opposites. And there is nothing wrong with your head, young men, if the thought of romance pops into your head with somebody that you're maybe at the gas station or somebody that you meet from a very different church background, or you can tell that you have something in common. There's just some chemistry there, and something seems to click between you. Do not think that means you have to pursue a relationship and get married to that person. Falling in love is something that defies our understanding. And I know that. The Bible proverb writer says that there are some things that are too wonderful for me. And there is always an attraction between opposites. And sometimes the more opposite, the stronger that the attraction is. But the fact of the matter is there are some things that you should look for if you're going to expect a harmony in the end. And one is shared memories. You need to be able to connect with somebody from their frame of reference. Now, we didn't all grow up in the same church, and we didn't all grow up in the same community, but there needs to be things that we can go back to and remember and talk about and understand each other, because our memories produce our values. And that's the second thing. We need to have shared values, things that we appreciate. Young man, if you sense in that girl that she probably doesn't even understand your way of life, and you don't understand hers, and you don't understand her values, the thing that shaped her, you don't understand how Canaan came and talked to her with despite about grandpa, great-great-great-grandfather Noah, you can't understand that, then let her alone. Along with shared values are common goals. Would we be pulling for the same thing? If you have those three things, shared memories and shared values and shared goals, then you can have harmony in a relationship. Now, the fact of the matter is that there is so much giving up in every marriage that it is very common for married people to feel like they got steamrolled, flattened out, and they have none of their own personality left. I've given up so much, I don't even know who I am anymore. That is so common. But if you take a girl from the world, or you marry a fella from the world, and you try to put them in your mold, just imagine how much worse that is. Or even a girl from a very different background than what you have, the greater the gap between you and other social circles, the more it exponentially increases the problems of resolving issues in your marriage. And if you have stuff that you just know you're never going to agree on and you can't talk about, you're on the road to a dysfunctional home relationship. As we think about the people in the Bible who felt that click of love and fell for it, like Samson or Solomon, who loved many strange women, you realize that the chemistry that goes along with a man and woman is a very normal thing, and it doesn't mean that God is calling you to marry that person. You can just dismiss it and move on. If you take a girl away from her gods, what are you going to do to take the gods out of her heart? It's like that. You can take a boy out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the boy. And so it is. It's a common, in this common struggle for one to feel smothered and frustrated and not having any personality left, for individuals who are like that to turn to wrong sources for fulfillment in life. And then there are secrets, and then you will find yourself, cheated and betrayed. And the heartache that went along with Esau, and he went then and he found daughters of Ishmael, or found one, and he married her. But there again, what did that produce? In the Old Testament, it was polygamy. How do you have closeness when you have so many companions? In the New Testament, it's forbidden, but there's so many who go from one partner to another, looking for someone who will give them some kind of fulfillment in life. And the end of that road is always frustration. Because if they find fulfillment in an illicit marriage, that's wrong. And if they don't find fulfillment, that's wrong. And so there's no right way for a person to keep on going other than to work on the marriage that he has been led to in his life. And so this morning I would just like to give that as a very, very serious matter to the young people as you make your choices in life. If you have some impulses that pop into your mind about somebody that you think, well, that would be, wonder what that'd be like to marry that person. We just really click together. We understand each other. Well, there's a lot more of us that had that same thought along the way and had to dismiss it and go on to choose a godly wife. Number 7, it's the last one here, and that is to accept the place and calling. We got into this in our Sunday school class because Romans chapter 9 makes a big deal about this, and we talked about the issue of predestination. I would just like to point out to you that the word destination means the end of the journey. And God has not decided anyone of us will go to hell here. He has not determined that ahead of time. God is not willing that any should perish. But God has determined, he has pre-chosen gifts and calling. You cannot change a lot of things about your life, about who your parents are, about what kind of home you were born into, the fact that your parents maybe carried you into this church whenever you were little. And refusing to accept a lot in life, an unfair situation, when you just wish that you could change it, if you refuse to accept that, I'd just like to explore what happens in that kind of a situation. You see, Esau was born first, and then Jacob was born second. And they were always told that the oldest one would get the blessing. That was the tradition. Now, if God wanted to bless Jacob, why didn't he just have him born first? Why did he choose that he would be born second? But God did that. And there are Esau-Jacob situations in your life that God has chosen, and something that you may want very, very much, he's just decided that it's going to be out of your reach. You're going to have to learn to live without that. And you can find joy and satisfaction in the journey without having that. But I'd like to just draw that up a little bit on the board. And I kind of like these circles. And I'm not going to apologize for this. Maybe your temptation is a little different. But these are things that come to me. Along with self-pity. Well, let me just start with this. Envy and jealousy are twins. And people don't have to be bad to make you envious or jealous. They don't have to do a thing to make you envious or jealous. You can become envious and jealous of them all by yourself, just by watching them and wishing that you could have something that they have. But if you have those, you will move into self-pity. Why can't I have what they have? Why can't I receive what they have? And there is a form of anger or irritation that goes along with self-pity. That's just the way it is. It's part of the package. You cannot look at somebody who has it better than you and wish that you had that without being a little cross about it and gets under your skin and makes you irritated. And if you irritate about this thing and brood over this, it will produce, brooding will produce a moodiness. And then there'll either be an outburst of that surprise you of resentment, or it will go inwardly and end up in depression. Anybody who indulges in self-pity will either come to an outburst of anger or probably depression. And depression is such a subtle thing. Because all of us have moods that go up and go down. And if you fail of the grace of God, what our text talked about here, if you feel like somebody has a blessing that you should have, and why can't you have what they had? And this is something that we as adults, it's not just young people that struggle with this. We as adults struggle with this because we can't always have what we want. And this depression, if it goes deep, will result in a loss of relationships. And spiritual power. Depression takes that away from you. A loss of relationships and spiritual power. Life loses its meaning. And then out of that comes increased temptations. There are many people who give themselves permissions to go see the Canaanite girls again because they struggled with feeling pity for themselves over something that they didn't get. And it goes right back in and it feeds on itself. And this becomes their life. It becomes... And I wish I could give everybody in the whole world everything that they want. The people who wish they were married, I wish they could give them a husband or a wife. And the people who wish they had a perfect companion, I wish I could give them a perfect companion. But you know what? Life isn't that way, is it? If you resent that you don't have health or you resent this, there are so many things that you can be cross about. The list is endless. And because we are human beings, we want those things. And Esau wanted those things, but the more he wanted them, all that did is made his situation worse. And this thing of depression here, depression, we finally have to realize, it doesn't feel like we can choose whether to be depressed or not. It just comes on you. Where you're going to have to deal with that is back here whenever it's envy and jealousy. That's where you're going to have to deal with it. And so we like to draw a different circle before I close here this morning. And it is getting time to close. I'd like to just draw a different circle. It doesn't have to go to there. Envy and jealousy, there can a different response be chosen for that. If we have this, let's go into a spiritual exercise, such as meditation or reading the Bible or prayer or singing. All of those things are ways to involve our spirit in this. As we think about the promises that God, that he will give us. And as we get involved in this spiritual exercise and we begin to see the big picture that it's really all about God and his plan and that we need to fit in with his plan, then we become a partaker of the divine nature.
And as we have his divine nature, our hearts well up with thankfulness. Start that again, just to get a little better. Thankfulness is so opposite to depression. But it can start with the same struggle with envy and jealousy. I cannot feed this envy. I cannot feed this jealousy. I cannot let it grow in my life. I need to deal with this by somehow looking at God and again worshiping him and becoming involved in a spiritual activity that lifts me above myself. And as we are thankful, it increases our spiritual service. And we have fellowship one with another. And then instead of envy and jealousy, we have joy that our brother has privileges and that other people have blessings that we are never going to get to have. And so instead of starting out with envy and jealousy, you start out with joy. And it's a whole different way of life. You see, young people, as we talk about bless me even me also, O my father, what we have to realize is that Esau's sins took the blessing away from him, that if he had made other choices, he could have been blessed anyway. Because as I just noticed this week in going through our Bible memory, it's a passage at the end of the quarterly, if you turn over one page in your Bibles from Hebrews 12 and you go to Hebrews chapter 11, Esau's name shows up there too. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. And what if that would have been the focus of his life? What if he would have said, I have been blessed and it's enough. What God has given me is more than I deserve. Wouldn't that have made all the difference in his life? Well, this morning, Esau's dead and gone, but he lives on, doesn't he? And you young people, you have a lot of choices before you, but you're not the only ones. We as older ones do too. Let's pray for each other. Let's pray for each other as we go through this journey that we'd be able to see that there's still a moderator, there's a superintendent, there's someone who's making choices for us. And as we choose to be thankful and fit in with his plan, our lives will be blessed. Let's kneel for prayer. Our Father in heaven, as we have gathered in today, we thank you for being here with us and blessing us. We thank you so much for the sacred record of human beings who have lived in other times, facing other challenges and other circumstances and what we'll ever see. And yet there's so much like us. And this morning, as we look at Esau in our Sunday school lesson and in this message, Father, we have to admit what you surely must see over and over again, that we are so much like him. As we think about the areas where he wanted to do what's right, and he wanted to be blessed, and he wanted to have a blessing, and he wanted to be in the favored line. Father, you know so often we struggle and have passions to do what's right. And yet when it comes out into the choices of life, we find ourselves being pulled down by our environment and the way we choose to relate to that environment. Father, I think of our youth today. And as they are given so much by way of a godly heritage, and they're given so much by way of teaching and acceptance, and yet, Lord, we realize that their lives are not perfect, and there are faults that others have that they can focus on, and they can choose to become bitter, or they can choose to benefit from those situations and be blessed. This morning, we ask that you would speak to us in the quietness of our hearts of the areas where we are the most prone to go astray, and help us to find spiritual solutions in our journey so that we can be blessed and chosen of you. Father, we realize that we're not come to Mount Sinai. We're not coming to a God who just issues law and order and doesn't understand, but we're come to Mount Zion, to the city of Jerusalem, to a God who understands and who gives grace for the struggles of life. Help us to choose that way and be able to give your influence and bless others' lives as well.